This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Seth, I'm just warning you because I know that you get agita when we do it, but I think we're going to need to do an Astros Circle of Trust tomorrow. I think it's time.
Oh, well, no, I won't worry too much about it. The hardest ones will be, I'd say, maybe some of the guys, like guys that it started off hot as hell but have cooled off a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, where exactly are we with Yuli right this moment?
Right.
But other than that, I mean, everybody, it's going to be a very small circle of trust. It's going to be Greinke and a few other guys that are lucky to be there with him.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So we'll do that tomorrow. The Astros are off today, so tomorrow's a good day
to
do
that.
Oh,
they're off today? So Carlos Correa won't have a chance to actually run hard to first base to maybe sway my opinion a little bit.
Okay. A little foreshadowing right there. I like it. All right. So, Seth, the Astros have lost 7 of 8. And I think there's certainly people out there who feel like, why are they playing some of these games? You've got half your starting lineup out because of COVID. Thanks a lot, baseball. My contention this weekend is that we need a stat. We need a stat where, and what made me think of this was Lance McCullers' start, his last start, where he gave up 6 earned runs in a little over 3 innings, and you can directly attribute it to COVID. Because it was the vaccine that had him feeling under the weather, and I choose to believe it was him being under the weather that led to him stinking on that particular day. We need a stat like WAR, wins above replacement. We need a stat where we don't necessarily have the calculus that shows how it was arrived at, but we just trust that the number is correct, and the stat is something like losses because of COVID, like LBC, losses because of COVID. Like, I think the Astros, of their 8 losses this year, like, 2.7 of them are because of COVID, because of these guys being out of the lineup and Lance being sick because of the vaccine. I blame COVID for a third of their losses right now.
For a third of them?
A third of their losses, Seth. You heard me.
Yeah. Because the slowdown started before the COVID, except that Lance, let's see. Yeah, between Lance and these guys, I mean, at the very least, you'd like to say that they could have won. You could have won at least one. Yeah. I would put it at 2 point something right now.
Yeah, I got it at 2.7 right now. And don't tell me how I got there, because nobody tells us how they arrive at WAR either. You just got to trust the nerds is what you get. Like Seth. Seth likes to trust the nerds. Seth,
that's
right. You use nerd stats like drug addicts use stimulants to feel better.
That's right, because that's what advanced stats are mostly for, is to make it look like any player in baseball is actually really, really good, no matter how bad his actual batting average or ERA is or anything like that.
So take out that nerd syringe and jam it in my veins and give me some of the good stuff right now. Make me feel better about the Astros, nerd.
You know, I can remember when I was a kid, and a lot of times on a Monday, the first thing I loved to do was I'd get the paper newspaper, and, you know, before school, I'd lay it out. And I would check the stats, you know, from my baseball team. And the one that I always went to first was percent of spin that contributes to movement by release speed.
1988.
On the 4-seam fastball. There was nothing better in the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle than percent of spin that contributes to movement by release speed in a 4-seam fastball. And I got to tell you, honestly, get ready to hold on to your, was I wrong on this? Wait a second. What the hell? I thought I was about to say that Urquidy was actually really good at this, but I think I might be wrong. Wait. Yeah, Sir Keedy, fourth, okay. Okay. Fourth, suck it. Yeah, take that Yankees, take that Angels,
what is
take
he,
that Oakland
what is,
A's,
what is he
take
fourth
that Mariners.
Percent of spin above replacement adjusted, what is it again?
Sean, yes, Sean, it's active spin.
Okay.
It's percent of spin that contributes to movement by release speed. And Urquidy is fourth in Major League Baseball. Not just the AL, fourth in Major League Baseball. Yeah.
Okay.
And let me tell you, Sean, you're going to freak the hell out when I tell you who's number
more
two.
More than I did over Urquidy being fourth in adjusted spinneroony or whatever.
Who's got the percent of spin that contributes by movement to release speed? Who's got the second best on their splitter in Major League Baseball?
Serve it up to me, Seth Payne. Give it to me.
The Viking Ryan Stanek.
Oh, that's Stanek. Stanek Baratheon.
That's who's got the second best active spin and or percent of spin that contributes to movement by release.
Oh, I'm feeling better already. They are the most deceptive 7-8 team in baseball right now. Give me more, Seth. Give me more. Inject more into my vein. Do you have any more that you can make
yes,
me feel
this is a
nerd
this is
stats to make us feel better about the Astros?
This is an interesting one, too, because this one, there's an Astro who is 10th in this metric. And this is the percentage of hard hits. The percentage of – it's exit velocity.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Like, it's a hard hit.
Yeah.
And what percentage of your actual swings result in hard hits?
Okay.
This is a good one. This is a good sign that maybe this guy's better off than it's looked so far, and it'll be even better moving on further. This is Carlos Correa.
Okay. That actually does make me feel better.
Yeah. Now, yeah. But you'd also, that's what I always say with Carlos, is like, hey, you know, you hit the ball pretty hard. Sometimes these balls are going to be mishandled. Go ahead and start running fast right out of the box, okay? So, you know, maybe, like, I don't have to watch you. Like, you got to have some respect for yourself and know that some shortstops and second basemen are going to mishandle, or third basemen are going to mishandle some of your line drives, and just go ahead and run hard all the way when there's
a chance. There is a loaf factor to Carlos Correa. There's no doubt. Do you have any more of the good stuff, Mr. Statner, drug dealer, to make me feel – that Correa one actually does make me feel better. Your spin rate thing, I'm going to need to digest that one, but Correa, very easily digestible.
I got to – you know what I read? There's an Astros player who's got the best – who's got a very good XWOBA, XWOBA.
Hey, Seth, I know you and your nerd brethren all know exactly what that means, but for those of us who don't, what is it?
It's your expected weighted on-base average.
Ah.
Oh, for the audience, yeah, of course, you didn't want to, you didn't want to do the expected weighted on-base average.
Yeah.
I don't know what the weight part of it has to do with anything.
Maybe schedule or ballpark, something like
that. The XWOBA. Oh, yeah, okay. It's exit velocity, launch angle, and on certain types of batted balls, sprint speed. Oh, that's right. That's right. So this is like if it's a slow dribbler, but you're really, really fast. Okay, this is the one where, you know, I got super excited on
you
this
did?
One because I thought – Yes. The XWOBA, because I thought this is exactly this was my black swan that I'm looking for, where it's
gyrating right now,
just so rare and so unique that this will prove to me that this player, a much maligned player, because of his ability to dig it out from home to first, his bat speed and launch angle, all this stuff, his on-base percentage might not be as good as he expected to be based on his XWOBA.
If this is something to stick up for Miles Straw, you can just
This is exactly what had happened was that I had clicked on the column and it was showing the worst at the top instead of first because Martin Maldonado has the very worst XWOBA in baseball among people that have enough.
But as the old saying goes,
his electric foot speed doesn't apparently bail him out enough to increase his XWOBA.
As the old baseball saying goes, he's not being paid to XWOBA. That's not his thing, you know.
That's right.
It's not his deal.
We thought with the whole thing with the whole thing with Maldonado, remember somebody the other day suggested that when Greinke pitches that they use the DH to replace Maldonado in the field, and especially if Greinke's going to be going you know.
So let Greinke hit and you DH for Maldonado.
Let Greinke hit, yeah. And if it's, you know, he went eight innings on Saturday, so be it. Then you got to deal with a reliever or somebody, or, you know, just come on.
The problem is,
hitting at that point.
If Greinke gets knocked out in the second inning, you're stuck with a pitcher spot in the batting order.
Yeah,
at that point.
That's why it's a whole lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
This is another big, very advanced stat. Ooh. Here. 5-10. That is the record of the New York Yankees.
That's an advanced stat.
That's an advanced
stat. That is an advanced stat that makes me feel better about the Astros, actually.
It should make you feel better because they suck. They're really bad.
Yeah.
At the very least, we're going to drag them down with us if that's where we have to go. Look, Miles Straw he's not as great in the outfield as his speed would suggest, but he is 11th in sprint speed, and he's third,
awesome.
Sean. He's third in 90-foot running splits.
Beautiful.
So this is when he runs two bases and it's a non-home run, or when he has to dig it out on a run to first. So he's very, very fast, as we know. The one big thing, this is interesting, Sean. I think I'm gonna have to talk to Dusty Baker about this.
Okay.
The Astros right now are actually fifth in the league in defensive shifts. They shift 45% of the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, they're fourth in the league. That's got updated. So fourth. Well, Sean, back in 2017, when they, I don't know if you remember this or not, they won a legitimate World Series.
Now that you mention it, I do recall, yeah.
They were first in the league in defensive shifts. Back then, this is crazy. I just told you, right? They're 45% of the time they're shifting defensively,
yes.
And that puts them fourth in the league.
Yep.
They were number one in the league with 34%.
A lot of shifting
back
going
in 2017.
On.
Yeah. People have gotten shifty AF since in modern baseball. That's another term. That the WAF.
Right.
No, the expected, the EAF.
The
right?
weighted the shifty AF-ness of a
the
team.
XAF,
yep.
The XAF. The expected AF-ness. So in 2021, that what was that? I'd say 34-35%? 34.9% this year, like what the Astros led the league with in 2017.
Yeah.
They would be 13th in the league right now.
The game has changed.
To Dusty Baker. Hey, Dusty. The Dodgers are out there shifting 57.4% of the time with nobody on base. The A's are at 55.8%. We got to up our game, our shift game, my friend.
Oh, it's beautiful. So, Stat Nerd Seth, does Stat Nerd Seth have you feeling better about the Houston Astros? I do. I feel better. I feel slightly better after that. We'll do a circle of trust tomorrow on the Houston Astros. A lot of people wanting that.
I think Stanek's the guy that it works for, right? Because he's scuttled a little bit the other day, but his spin rate on his splitter is second best in the league.
Yeah, it's all
well,
anybody's talking about.
Excuse me, apologies to me. People at home are like, Seth, you moron. It's vertical movement due to top spin rate in the league on the splitters this second.
You know how we're supposed to give information to people on this show, Seth, that is going to make them more interesting when they walk up to the water cooler at work? Like, hey, you know, I heard some things on the radio, and guess what? And people are supposed to be like, wow, that's really – you just made sure that all of our listeners, that people are going to be running the other direction when they come to the water. Hey, did you hear about Urquidy's fourth-rated – adjusted spin-a-rooney. All right, we got to jump out.
Don't insult the stat.
I'm besmirching.
By calling it a spin-a-rooney.
I'm besmirching. Cornerstone players. Nick Caserio was asked, I believe by Ron the Show Hughley on Friday, who are your cornerstone players? We'll hear the Texans general manager's assessment next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Nick Caserio met with the media on Friday, was asked by our colleague here, afternoons, Ron the Show Hughley, who are your cornerstone players right now on this team?
You start to put labels on players. I don't think that's really fair to any particular players, right? Like, again, our thought process and mindset was to look at our roster, look at our team. And when you look at the players that we've added, most of them, not all, majority of them, that they have 4-3 to 7 years of experience, right? So they have some level of experience in the league. They've had some level of success wherever the program that they've been, right? So try to create as much competition, present an opportunity in front of them. And again, it's not putting labels on anybody that he's this, he's that. Like, that's not what we're going to be about. So what we're trying to do is build as good a comprehensive team as possible. Whatever that's going to look like, Ron, I don't really know at this point. Like, we know where we are at this point in time. we'll see how the rest of it transpires here kind of once we get started.
About what I expected from Nick Caserio. I think, sadly, Seth, the answer is probably more honest. Like, I think that would have been Nick Caserio's answer if he was inheriting a 12-4 football team.
Yeah.
Sadly, that is actually really close to being the correct answer, which is they don't have a lot of cornerstone players right now.
They don't. I think if you were being honest, I guess the other thing is it would just be a little too easy to figure it out just because there aren't that many.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd say Laremy Tunsil. You would say, even though I think this guy still has room to grow,
yeah.
But Zach Cunningham,
yep.
I think they feel pretty good about it. I think that Lovie Smith especially probably looks at Zach Cunningham and thinks that he can help him grow from a coverage standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like those two guys. Who am I missing now? Bradley Roby, I don't think you can count him as a cornerstone just because his whatever discipline issues he had in Denver seemed to have popped up again at least once last year. Do you really consider him a cornerstone?
Yeah, I look at cornerstone as, do you see this guy being somebody who gets another contract from you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whatever that means. If he's a rookie heading into the last year of his rookie deal like Justin Reed, is Justin Reed a cornerstone player? You know, is he a guy that you view as a guy who you would bring back? If it was a year ago, I would have said Justin Reed. He just was not that great this past year. New GM, you don't know what they think of him. My guess is they like him as a player, but we'll see. Like, I would, for sure, a year ago would have put Justin Reed in that category. I would still tend to. Like, I think Justin Reed, if he's not here, it may be more Justin Reed choosing to go somewhere else than the Texans saying see you later.
Yeah, see what you just did there, though? That just tells you the state of the franchise. Like, you don't tend to put somebody as a cornerstone, right? You know, you'd say, no, that guy's a cornerstone.
No,
yeah,
right.
He's going to be
you're
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Titus Howard.
So I agree exactly with what you're saying, but except that, yeah, it means he's not
a cornerstone.
Titus Howard, I think, is on the trajectory to.
Yeah.
And now you have to be careful with that because, remember, Max Sharping did some good things his rookie year too, mm-hmm. and then just kind of got stagnant. It's not always a given that people are going to improve from year to year. So Titus Howard has made some progress, and I think he'll continue to. I think it'll be good having a new offensive line coach. And I think Pep Hamilton constructing the run game and just giving a little bit more definition to what they're doing on any given down, I think is going to be good for all these guys.
Yeah, just reinforces the fact that I don't know that they're going to be able to find 10 guys to put on the season tickets this year.
Yeah.
I'm being serious.
Well, yeah, no, and even if they do, gosh, like at running back, think about how much things have changed. We're talking about, obviously, there's no big hot take or anything. It's just the fact that, yeah, running backs aren't valued as much as they used to be. But at one point, you know, if you had David Johnson and Mark Ingram on your roster, holy crap, that's a formidable backfield. But, you know, it was 2015, 2016
yeah,
or so,
yeah.
Back then.
Yeah.
And Philip Lindsay, I think likewise, like all three of those guys are intriguing, but not a single one of them's a cornerstone guy, obviously because of age and injury. They're just none of them's a cornerstone.
They should be recognized on the season tickets by collectively putting the three of their heads on one random running back body. A body that just says RB on the jersey and then their three heads on it, a three-headed running back season ticket.
You know what's a shame?
Hmm.
Is Brandon Cooks could be a cornerstone guy
mm-hmm.
if he would just stick around in any one given place for more than a couple of years.
Yeah.
Like I think if Brandon Cooks had been here for several years already, I think people might say, yeah, you know what, Brandon Cooks, he's starting to get up there in years, but he's still but he's still relatively young and he's under contract. Like he's a cornerstone guy. I'll put him on my honorary cornerstone list, even though I don't expect him to be here 3 years from now. By virtue of being a veteran guy and being your biggest speed threat right now, like genuine deep threat, then I will say Brandon Cooks is a cornerstone player.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is they redid his deal and made the last 2 years voidable.
Yeah.
So he's a free agent after 2022, I want to say. Like it's – I mean, that just that mere question, you know, Caserio's answer was going to be, that was going to be the answer, even if this were a team that was laden with stars, is we don't put labels on guys. It's a very Patriot thing to do. This is a roster, when you go through that exercise we just went through here, Seth, of cornerstone guys. I mean, it just goes to show you how important these next couple drafts are for this team to get restocked here with some young players.
Since we're talking about labels, real quick movie review, Thunder Force, which is on Netflix right
okay.
now.
Okay, yep.
It's all right. I think it was the number one movie on Netflix when I was
What's
browsing
it about?
Through the other day. It's about Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer play these two women that figure out a way. Well, Octavia Spencer figures out a way to modify humans' genetics to turn them into mutants to help fight a super breed of mutants or all these different mutants. It's kind of like a broke-ass X-Men type of
Is it
thing.
Like a sci-fi
a comedic
kind of
X-Men. Yeah, but it's a comedy. It's Melissa McCarthy.
Okay.
It's all right. It's kind of something to do on a Friday night. It's really – the value in it is in Jason Bateman, who plays a half-crab man. He's like a man with the arms of a crab. And there's two little romantic vignettes between Jason Bateman and Melissa McCarthy.
Really?
Yeah, where that's pretty much the best part of the movie, and everything else is just fluff. You watch it for – you could watch like 10 total minutes of Jason Bateman interacting with Melissa McCarthy and get everything you need out of the movie.
Okay. All right. So
– Oh, so – but what made me think of that, I apologize, was that when she asks – when Melissa McCarthy is at dinner with Jason Bateman at a seafood place, she asks whether he calls himself a crab man, and he says, I'm not really into labels. So.
Okay, so that's Caserio talking about the Texans roster. Melissa McCarthy. Okay, so it's a comedy because she just did a movie last year where she was like there were three female mobsters. The Kitchen is what it is. I'm looking at her IMDb profile.
You sound surprised that it's a comedy with Melissa McCarthy.
No. I'm not surprised because I know she's a comedic actress. I'm saying that I was more surprised when she did The Kitchen a couple of years ago. And it was more of, it wasn't really a comedy. There was, I think there were some comedic moments in it, but it was more of a mobster movie.
Look at what a couple of male pigs we are, Sean. We were talking about comedic actors turned serious actors the other day. Yeah, we didn't bring up Melissa McCarthy.
Listen
we were talking
to us.
About Tom Hanks
yep.
and Will Smith and mm-hmm. all these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Paula Poundstone.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
She's probably done some serious stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nick Caserio, one other one from Nick Caserio here, was asked, what do they look for in a player with the Texans? He brought up an example, and this made people drink because it was a former Patriot. He brought up an example of a former Patriot and the evaluation they went through in New England.
Not to speak on any particular player in New England, but just on the heels of Edelman's retirement, right? There's a good example of a player who had some physical characteristics, right? But then he also had some non-football traits relative to his work ethic, relative to his mindset, relative to his willingness to improve on a day-to-day basis that made himself into the player that he ultimately became. So, again, I'd say we have a lot of people in our roster, in our locker room, that have that same sort of mindset and mentality. So those are the things that we're going to try to bring to the fore and see if we can identify in the players in a draft that have some of those qualities so then they come in here. Then we can actually evaluate those and see those.
There was a really interesting story on ESPN.com. Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots, Seth, has like a weekly notebook that he does with, 10 different bullet points. And the main story was on the heels of Edelman retiring last week was how the Patriots arrived at drafting Edelman. I think they drafted him in like the 7th round. And they went into the detail that the team went into just to get Julian Edelman on the team. Like the amount of scouting, the amount of evaluation, the amount of discussion with Julian Edelman, because it was a very nuanced situation because he was a quarterback at Kent State. And, anytime you want to tell somebody who's a quarterback, they're going to have to play something else in the league. There's a bit of a sales job. They didn't sell him too hard on it. He knew kind of what he was coming out of Kent State. But it was a really good read just to hear the amount of work that went into a 7th round pick.
Yeah,
wound up paying off, obviously.
Well, and the big thing, the thing you always have to watch out for, and this is where sometimes I don't know if I think Bill O'Brien might have put some of those intangible things higher than they should have been in relation to the actual physical skills. Because I was curious, I was thinking about Julian Edelman. Because, he's super competitive, works hard, he's a quarterback turned wide receiver, Tom Brady could trust him, all those things. But I thought about, his numbers coming out of college, I'm guessing that he had an okay 40 time, but I bet just from the way he plays that he had an incredible three-cone drill. Lo and behold, 95th percentile three-cone drill, 97th percentile 20-yard shuttle, like all that short action, super quick stuff that slot receivers need.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with kind of a grittiness to try to, just win by any means necessary in the short area. So it's a combination, right? I'm going to start talking like Nick Seria now. It's a combination, right? It's those things that knock him down the draft chart, right? But also, it can't just be that he's a really hard worker. Because if you have a bunch of really hard workers who don't have anything notable physically, you're going to end up with, at best, a 6-10 football team, but that tries real hard in the fourth quarter when they're losing. So Edelman's that kind of guy where, for whatever reason, when he's falling down that board, you're looking at him and you're thinking, okay, small school guy, quarterback, but look at that. Look at these measurables. It's not just the – because they didn't really know. Every damn kid coming out of college has a great speech about how hard they work and how bad they want it and all that stuff. And a lot of their coaches are saying the same thing. You don't really know what Julian Edelman's all about until you actually get him in the building.
Yeah.
And he starts competing for you. So it's gotta be a blend of both things. You can't just have a bunch of gritty, try-hard guys who also, by the way, aren't very good at football.
Yeah, I loved hearing Casario mention the chunk we played for you of him talking about Edelman was part of a much longer answer about what they look for in players. But I loved at least Seth hearing him lead into that answer with physical traits.
Yeah,
if that was
yeah.
O'Brien, we would have been peppered with tough, smart, and dependable for 45 seconds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's awesome to be tough, smart, and dependable. Right. But also, what was our fourth criteria?
GAF.
Good at football.
Good at football, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, good at football. All right. It's been quiet on the Deshaun Watson front over the weekend. I think Instagram tells us a couple of things about why it's been quiet from the plaintiff's side and why it's been quiet from the defendant's side. We'll get you up to speed next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.